Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Holy smokes, I'm really excited about today's episode because we're going to dive deep into some nitty-gritty details that are going to tremendously help you accelerate your real estate portfolio, save on taxes, find some incredible loopholes that will make you even more wealthy. Things that you didn't even know and things that are going to blow your mind. My guest today is the great Garrett Sutton. Of course, if you've been on the show before, you've listened to the show before, you know from episode 197 that Garrett Sutton is the Rich Dad Advisor. He is the attorney. He's Robert Kiyosaki's attorney. So he handles all of the legal mumbo jumbo as it comes to real estate investing. And The Loopholes of Real Estate is his best-selling book. And I was telling Garrett before we started that this book has been like the subject of many dinner conversations for Natalie and I, talking about all of the amazing things that we've learned. In fact, we've employed so many of the strategies and tactics in this book that have really changed our business model tremendously. So Garrett is back on the show, and Garrett is also the founder of Corporate Direct. I want you to pay attention to this company. Corporate Direct teaches you and helps you with affordable asset protection. They form and they maintain your LLCs in all 50 states. So we have so many clients at Morris Invest that say, how do I set up my LLC? It's simple. Just go to corporatedirect.com and just tell them you heard about them from Morris Invest, and they'll give you $100 off setting up your LLC. Just say, hey, I heard about you on Morris Invest podcast. Great. You'll save $100. So Garrett is the founder of Corporate Direct. He's prolific. He's wildly intelligent, and he's become a good friend now. Garrett, great to have you back on the show.
Clayton, great to be with you again.
Well, it's a real treat to be here with you again. And you and I had a chance to hang out a little bit in Arizona a few months ago. We had some dinner. We got to talk. We had a great conversation. And I'm going to get to see you in a few days. I'm really excited about it.
Should be another good event.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be able to talk a little shop and a little real estate and a little legal stuff on the side. But I wanted to dive deep today on the show with some of the stuff that we didn't get to in our first episode. So I would implore our audience, go back and listen to episode 197. We kind of really laid the basics out of what Garrett talks about in his book, Loopholes of Real Estate, The Secrets of Successful Real Estate Investing. And they're not necessarily loopholes in the sense that they're like, we think of loopholes as what, like illegal, I guess. But this is all part of the tax code. This is all the way that the legal system is run and enables us to do it all above board, right?
Absolutely. When we use loopholes, we're referring to kind of the old English term of loophole, which is an escape for your benefit. And these are strategies that people have used for generations to protect themselves in their real estate investing. That's the loopholes we're referring to.
Right. So it's nothing below board. It's all above board. And the book is really fantastic. So we've got on that first episode, we really laid the groundwork for just the basics of loopholes of real estate investing. But there have been a lot of questions that Natalie and I have had as we've gone more deeply into your strategies and tactics and the stuff that you talk about at Corporate Direct and the things that you help clients with. So I'd like to kind of dive into some of these deeper topics today, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
So this is really kind of advanced real estate investing today. So if you've if you're just kind of starting out, please bookmark this because you will get here. Don't think that you can't get here. You will get here. When you've got 30 properties or 50 properties and you're setting up holding companies and all of those things in order to keep more of your money in your own pocket, you will want to listen back to this episode. And if you already have that many properties and you're already on your way, then this is going to really help you. So first question I'd love to ask you, Garrett, is, you make the distinction in your book between earned income and passive income and portfolio income. Can you explain the difference quickly and explain how the new tax law affects your income differently? Earned income and passive income and portfolio income, for what are they and how does this new tax law affect them differently?
Well, earned income is what you the money you earn when you go to work every day. Passive income is the money you earn from your real estate investments. You don't necessarily have to be on that the property, the duplex, every day. It's passive. It comes to you without you having to do earned income, work at the property. And then portfolio income is from your generally your paper assets. And the new tax law does favor people who are engaged in earned income activities. If you're not a consultant, a professional like myself does not benefit at certain income levels from the new tax law. But if you're a business owner, the new tax law does benefit you. For passive investing, it's the the tax law really doesn't benefit you that much. Tom may disagree with that, but from my perspective, it's still the same, and you're still going to invest in real estate. And then portfolio income is, again, for me, still the same. So I was really concerned, Clayton, when the law came out, the new tax law, that we would be changing entities. I was worried that the C corporation would be something that people would want to use to hold their real estate investments. And thankfully, that's not the case. You still use LLCs, which offer better asset protection, for holding your real estate. And so that was a real concern, but we're very comfortable with the fact that you're still going to use LLCs to hold real estate. You may use an LLC taxed as an S corp or even a C corp to conduct your business affairs.
Okay, that's great to know. So you guys were worried you guys were going to be flooded with all kinds of people needing to change entities all of a sudden, right?
Right. And, you know, the tax law came out over Christmas and nothing got done for 2 weeks. No one knew what was in it. There were no reports out on it. But when the reports finally came out, Clayton, we were really relieved to see that you would still use LLCs to hold real estate.
That's great, because as you say in the book, you say investing in your own name. And this was something we didn't know. On page 43 of your book, you say, if you operate a business as a sole proprietor and you handle real estate in your individual name, you have a 5 times greater chance of an IRS audit than if you operate through an entity. Holy smokes.
The IRS has found people who operate as sole proprietors, that's easy money for them. They're really good at going in, looking at someone's sole proprietorship books and finding monies that are owed to the IRS. So it's just the low-hanging fruit for them to go after these sole proprietorships. Using an entity, as you say, Clayton, you have a 5 times lesser risk of being audited by using an LLC or a corporation.
And what about that? I'm curious. Like, what about that just kind of forces the IRS to, I don't want to say take the lazy route, but they just kind of see something like, we're just not going to bother with it.
Well, I think the reason that they're so good at collecting from these sole proprietorships is people, you know, when they're starting out, they don't keep very good books. Hmm. A lot of people won't have a bookkeeper at the start. They won't do what's proper from an accounting standpoint. And the IRS can go in and quickly see that money is owed. As well, I mean, look at it from the IRS agent's point of view. If you're serious about your business, you're going to set up an LLC or a corporation. If you're not serious, if you're kind of playing the margins and you know, taking the scofflaw approach, you're going to use a sole proprietorship. The IRS says, if you're not serious about your business, if you don't set up an LLC or corporation, we're going to be suspicious about your intentions here. And so that's another reason they find it very easy to go after sole proprietorships.
Hmm. You also write about in the book how the government wants private real estate investors because it has shown that it cannot manage real estate. On page 22, you say this, quote, in some cities such as San Francisco, the municipal government still owns large housing complexes. They are the most mismanaged rat traps around in all the private sector. In all, the private sector just does a much better job of it. Can you explain this to our audience that may not know this? I mean, are we thinking about like Cabrini housing project in Chicago that was one of the most famous disasters of public projects in history?
Exactly right. After the war, the World War II, there were all these temporary housing projects that went up to house people. The governments put up these projects. And they were supposed to be temporary, but they never went away. And the joke became there's nothing more permanent than temporary government housing. And they were not well run. The cities do not have the same incentive or management style as a private investor does. And finally, the cities and counties around the country just realized, let's let the private sector do this. We're not very good at running housing projects. You still have these historic projects around in New York and San Francisco, and they are probably the worst example of slumlords. The worst slumlords in the country are these cities and county governments. And so most of the government agencies have gotten away from owning the public housing. They'll do the Section 8. They'll provide assistance for people, but they're not actually going to be the landlords of these huge projects that have really turned into rat traps.
Yeah, what we're seeing in a lot of these communities, I see this in Detroit, where I invest, and I love the suburbs of Detroit. They've torn down. I mean, the city has come in and basically torn down a lot of these properties, so they're just vacant lots. And private investors have come in and built really nice townhome style, communities that are totally separate and look totally different than those project communities did years ago.
Right. And it's better for the city. It's better for the surrounding environment. And it's really the private enterprise can do this much better than a government can.
Well, speaking of government, we know one of the most bloated governments around is California. In fact, you write a lot about California being an unfriendly state for investors. Our mutual friend, Tom Wheelwright, he's joked that it could even be called the Republic of California.
Socialist Republic of California.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you have so many businesses moving to where you are, out in, you're in Arizona, right?
I'm in Reno, Nevada.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but so many people move into Nevada, move into Arizona from the California area, move into Oregon and even other places. So why is this? Why are we jokingly calling this the Republic of California?
Well, the state of California is now a one-party system. They've changed the way that voting occurs so that the two top vote getters are on the final ballot, and typically those two top vote getters are Democrats. So you in the state assembly, the Democrats have a supermajority. They are pressed by fairly liberal groups who have their own ideas about things, and that's fine. But you're not getting two sides of the political spectrum in California anymore, which lends itself to the government taking steps that, perhaps would be better handled if there was a two-party system. And so right now you have people leaving California in droves. Here in Reno, Nevada, I mean, we're just 8 miles from the California border, and we're used to seeing some California license plates. But lately here in Reno, every 10th car has a California plate, and it's just because so many people are moving out of the state of California. The taxes are really high. The unfunded pension liability for the state workers is close to $1 trillion. I mean, how does a state come up with $1 trillion to pay all the promised retirement benefits? They're going to have to tax even more. So people are seeing what's coming and leaving California. That said, a lot of my family lives there. I grew up there. It's a nice place to live. But, you go into a city like San Francisco, and it's unfortunate for these people, but there's so many homeless people on the streets now.
Right.
And there are needles everywhere. People are openly defecating in the street. It's just not the San Francisco that people used to love and enjoy.
I was there covering an Apple event a few years ago. I used to go out and cover a lot of the Apple events, and I would stay downtown San Francisco near the Moscone Center. And one day I came out of the whatever hotel that they had put me up in, and I walked out, and there was a woman sitting there, a homeless person, and she had a pet rat on her shoulder. She had a pet rat. She was just like feeding it. And I was like, oh my gosh, people have this perception of this utopia of San Francisco. And it's like, I found it to be like one of the dirtiest cities around, and I'm from Philadelphia and I can say that. But there are some other things about California that I want our audience to know about, because you mentioned in the book LLC fees, and there's a couple, let's go through some of these, right? LLC fees, homestead exemptions, tax rates, as you mentioned, doing business with even one LLC or a 1% member living in California. So let's say I have some family in California. We set up an LLC. I'm just making up a cousin name. Cousin John lives in California. We decide to set up an LLC together, and I live in New Jersey. Well, even if I have that one member living in California, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, the state of California would say, Cousin John, by having a 1% ownership interest in this LLC, that means the LLC is doing business in the state of California because Cousin John lives there. And they would demand $800 a year because their position is your LLC, even though it's operating out of state, has John involved. And so they would want the $800 from you. And so a lot of syndicators now will not allow California residents into their syndications because they just don't want to be bothered by California's Franchise Tax Bureau board. And so it's just kind of, it's skewed the investment activities in the state of California. You will find that a Californian that wants to invest in Texas real estate, they set up a Texas LLC, they're managing it from California. The profits will flow through to the state of California, to that resident. He'll pay taxes on the profits, but that's not enough. The state of California wants the $800 a year on the theory that that California resident managing the Texas property, the Texas LLC, the Texas LLC is doing business in the state of California under that scenario. And it's infuriating for a lot of people. I've had people leave California, clients have moved from California just because of the $800 annual fee for each LLC and corporation. That's enough to get people to move.
I mean, we have at Morris Invest, we have a ton of California investors just because properties are so expensive there. So they invest, they buy one of our $50,000 homes, that cash flow, $700-$800 a month out of state. And they're always up against that $800. And it just, my whole family, my extended family, mother-in-law and father-in-law and so forth, they're, live in California. They've got to deal with that $800 because they live there. So the only answer is they've got to move, right?
That's a well-trodden path. A lot of people are moving.
Right.
But here's another strategy, Clayton. Say you have three Ohio properties and you've got two Ohio LLCs and then you've got a Missouri property. You've got a Missouri LLC. If you own those in your individual name, you'd have to pay $800 times three for each of the three LLCs. What we do is we have one Wyoming LLC own those three LLCs above it. And then the Wyoming LLC, because your family lives in California, the Wyoming LLC will pay the $800 to the state of California. So in that scenario, we only have to pay the $800 once to the Wyoming LLC. And the Wyoming LLC in turn owns the Ohio and Missouri LLCs. And we can save the the $800 on each of those LLCs. So that's one of the strategies to look at.
That's great. And that's why we love using Wyoming. And you write about that in the book. Kind of back to the California thing for a moment, charging orders. And that is specifically related to Wyoming. So California, first of all, what is a charging order and why is it so terrible in California?
Well, the charging order is really a lien on distribution. So if someone sues you, Clayton, in a car wreck and they want to get at your real estate, in some states, the law is very weak, including California. The court will allow you to the car wreck victim to barge right into the California LLC and force a sale of the property. In Wyoming and other strong states, the charging order is the exclusive remedy. And so what the car wreck victim gets is a lien on distributions, meaning they have to wait for money to be distributed from the Wyoming LLC to you, Clayton, before they can get any money. Well, Wyoming may not make any distributions. Wyoming owns the Ohio and Missouri LLCs. They may not make any distributions to Wyoming. So Wyoming has nothing to distribute to the car wreck victim. This is how we structure entities. We use strong states like Wyoming that have good charging order protection. And we know that certain states have weak protection and we have to plan for that. Now, California's law is we can have the charging order, but we can also have another remedy, which is judicial foreclosure, where the court goes in and forces a sale of the assets. And on one hand, you can see why some courts do that. I mean, the person was in the car wreck. Why shouldn't they collect from Clayton, right? That's one attitude that's out there. The other attitude, Wyoming, Nevada, Delaware, is we need to protect investors and we're going to allow someone to collect. They just have to sit around and wait to collect via the charging order. And so there are two attitudes on it. And I can see the merit in both attitudes, but we like to use Wyoming and Nevada so we can better protect our clients. And so that's how it is. Some states are strong and some states are weak. It's a good thing we have a federal system with, you know, each state gets to choose how it wants to operate.
Right. And Wyoming seems to be the one that's really been battle tested, and you know, other states have gone lax on it, like Florida and as well. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Florida doesn't protect the single member LLC anymore.
So Garrett, what I'd love to do is, because I have so many more questions for you, I'd love to really make this into a part one and part two and have you come back next week for another episode where we're going to dive into even more details about, Wyoming. We're going to talk about homestead exemptions, tax rates. We'll talk about flipping versus holding real estate. Can you stick around and we'll do another episode and have you come back next week as well?
That'd be great, Clayton.
Perfect. My guest has been Garrett Sutton, of course, the founder of Corporate Direct, really smart attorney, and he's best-selling author, one of Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Advisors, and a fantastic book, The Loopholes of Real Estate. You've got to read this book and just get out a pen and pencil and just make so many notes, because it's going to change the way that you think about investing. He's just such a clear and engaging writer to make law somehow accessible to people like me. It's fantastic. And if you want to save money setting up your LLCs and having it all managed for you very easily, just go over to corporatedirect.com. That's Garrett's company. Just mention that you heard about his company from Morris Invest, and when you tell the person on the phone, you'll save $100 off of the setting up of your LLC and everything for your real estate purchasing. My guest has been Garrett Sutton. Garrett, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We'll see you next time on the Investing in Real Estate show. And Garrett, we'll be back next week for more on all of this. We'll see you next time, everyone.